please now introduce our next item. Reason being, full disclosure, I'm trying to, you know, get this meeting that will not have to require breaking for lunch, losing an hour, and having to reconvene. So that's my plan. But doing it and still allowing efficiency and firmness as requested by Mayor Delgado.
Item 18 is a supplemental environmental project criteria and priorities. This is an information and discussion item, and many of you will recall that we do this about, we have this discussion about every 2 to 3 years about our enforcement-related settlement and supplemental environmental projects, also known as SEPs. That's our shorthand, funding priorities. During the last update in 2015, we established our groundwater assessment and protection program as our regional pre-approved SEP to implement priority projects addressing regional groundwater monitoring with an emphasis on domestic well sampling, groundwater sustainability, and environmental justice issues. These priority areas are in alignment with the Governor's Office, Human Rights and Water Law, and associated Water Board resolutions, and the State Water Board's strategic plan. Since 2015, we've received and applied or allocated approximately $1 million, just shy of $1 million, in pre-approved GAP SEP funds towards 7 projects. You can see those projects on Table 3 of the staff report. This item is intended to reaffirm our SEP funding priorities with the board. Following this, staff will coordinate with the State Water Board Office of Enforcement staff to bring our regional pre-approved SEP program into alignment with the State Board's recently revised SEP policy. This includes our formalizing these priority funding areas in a State Water Board approved resolution. To inform our discussion today, Matt Keeling of our staff will be giving an overview of our existing settlement funding management structure, priority project areas, and the State Water Board coordination that I just mentioned. Matt.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Matt Keeling, Senior Water Resource Control Engineer. Should I raise my hand again today?
Yeah.
So as John indicated, the intent of this item in our discussion today is to make sure that we're still in alignment with our regional funding priorities as we move forward in our coordination with the State Water Board to formalize our Groundwater Assessment Protection Program, GAP, supplemental environmental project, regionally approved and third-party administered SEP. Just as we did with you back in 2015. So because of the revised statewide supplemental environmental policy, we're now required to formalize that in coordination with our State Water Board Office and enforcement counterparts. I'd like to point out that the staff report includes some additional information regarding our Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Protection Program, CCAMP, which is affiliated with our GAP program, and also a low-impact development initiative program, and some of our historical funding efforts towards habitat conservation and preservation, just to provide some context with respect to our previous priorities associated with the application of settlement funds and how we've kind of progressed over time. So the focus of my talk today is going to be on our GAP SEP moving forward and not CCAMP or LIDI.
Can I ask one question about, are we still funding LIDI or are we winding that down?
There's still approximately $500,000 within the LIDI account. There's ongoing discussions with respect to LIDI priorities relative to our other funding priorities. At this point, it's currently uncertain whether or not we're going to continue to fund LIDI or reassign those funds to some of the things that we'll talk about today.
Is Leedy actively working at this point, or is it in kind of mothball mode?
It's, I wouldn't say mothball mode, but it's kind of in a state of, hibernation. They still have an annual work plan. They still have some areas where they think funding may be appropriate, but we just don't have, with the absence of Darla Inglis, who's implementing that for us, there's nobody really to carry that forward. So, yes.
Just like old what's-his-name.
Yeah.
They rode off into the sunset. And I want to highlight that there's still money allocated to Liddy. Uh-huh. And as Matt indicated, we're kind of having an internal conversation or teeing up an internal conversation about priorities, this versus that. I also want to acknowledge, before we do anything, we'll come back and have that discussion here, too, because you had directed that money originally at Liddy, and I think that begs another discussion. If we think there's a priority elsewhere, we'll come back and have that discussion.
I just had a question. Is there a dovetailing, though, between the stormwater resource planning, just that's going on statewide, and some of these low-impact development projects, or is there no synergy there?
I don't have good enough visibility into the program to be able to answer that.
Okay.
I can find that out, though.
Okay.
All right, so before we get started, it's probably a good idea to more clearly define what a SEP is, Supplemental Environmental Project, and a little context. So all of us are more or less familiar with administrative civil liability orders that we issue to dischargers in response to violation and that assess monetary penalties or fines that are associated with certain types of violations, either permitting requirements or surface spills that cause water quality impacts. The default is for the settling party, responsible party, discharger, whatever you want to call them, to pay that fine into the state water board's cleanup and abatement account. However, the state water board's supplemental environmental project policy allows the dischargers to apply up to 50% of their monetary penalty towards an environmentally beneficial project that goes above and beyond what they're normally required to do, either as part of their permitting requirements or to mitigate the causes or the impacts associated with the violation, say if it's a spill in particular. The SEP policy includes a list of these types of projects. They could be public health focused, so something like water sampling to provide information to the public about the quality of their water, replacement water. Also, projects can be focused on pollution prevention and reduction, environmental assessments and audits, so monitoring, for example. And it also includes habitat conservation and restoration type projects. The SEP policy fairly clearly states, you know, what's allowable and what's not as far as a project. So the discharger can propose their own SEP. So they can propose it and implement it themselves. That's a first party SEP. They also have the ability to select a project that's implemented by a third party. And these are typically one-off types of projects, and these are called third-party SEPs. There's a component of a third-party SEP, which is a third-party administered SEP, and this is usually a party that provides ongoing implementation of certain types of projects. And this is what we're focusing on here moving forward in this discussion with you, is the formalization of our regionally approved third-party administered SEP in our groundwater program. Oh, and I just want to point out is that the discharger is not obligated to select a third-party administered SEP if it's available within a certain region. They can pay the fine, the entire amount of the penalty, the clean bank account. They can select whatever and propose whatever project that they want to apply their portion of their penalties towards. So I'm going to briefly go over what our regional funding priorities are based on our ongoing discussions. And as you will see, there's a direct relationship with what I'm going to talk about here in the previous discussion we had relative to item 17. Talk briefly about our existing funding management structure. And then I'm going to give you an update on the projects that we currently have in the works. And that we're making good use of the SEP funding that we've been able to capture since 2015, that the dischargers have voluntarily elected to apply a portion of their civil liability towards. And I'll talk a little bit about the benefits of having a third-party pre-approved SEP, hit some of the high points of the SEP policy that sets the stage for us and the next steps that we need to implement, and then I'll try to summarize what we talked about. So based on our most recent discussions with the board and relevant to our previous discussion, we're providing an increased focus on funding towards assisting disadvantaged communities. And not with just an emphasis on drinking water, but also looking at wastewater issues. And in a lot of cases, they're intricately tied to each other. And we're talking here about things like outreach, education, providing technical capacity, but more importantly, consistent with what we were just talking about, is providing and developing capacity and leadership within these communities so that they can embrace and take charge of addressing their drinking water and wastewater issues. The second area that we're focusing our funding priorities on is our regional monitoring. This is consistent with our ongoing CCAP program and the initial gap work plan and associated resolution that you approved in 2000, this board approved in 2012. There's three basic areas of regional monitoring that we're focusing on. Domestic well sampling is one of them, with an emphasis on providing rural residences with information about the safety of their drinking water. So in California, public water systems are regularly sampled, and the people who get water from those public water systems get consumer confidence reports, so they're aware about the quality of their water. So we're providing this as a service to rural residences with an emphasis on disadvantaged communities, and there's a tie-in between this and the disadvantaged community-related efforts that we're working on. We're also now focusing or providing an additional focus on sustainability and climate change associated with our regional monitoring, in particular the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And with respect to our historical efforts, obviously we're focusing on regional monitoring that helps us evaluate the health of our basins in our watersheds, and that informs our actions and the effectiveness of our actions. I'd like to point out that consistent with our original gap work plan, the overall objective is basically to combine the last two here. Throughout our region and the state, there are a large number of entities that are implementing regional scale groundwater monitoring programs. And what we would like to do to the extent that we can is use some of this funding to coordinate and leverage and kind of combine as many regional monitoring efforts as we can. So we've got SGMA that's supposed to develop regional monitoring programs. We've got salt and nutrient management plans. We've got water management districts and agencies that have programs. We've got our individual discharger monitoring and reporting requirements. And there's a lot of redundancy, and I think we can provide some efficiencies in developing regional scale monitoring programs that address a variety of types of projects, initiatives, and objectives.
Matt, can you repeat that list? It was SGMA, I missed the one in the middle, water management districts, and the discharge reporting. What's the other data set?
Salt nutrient management planning efforts are also supposed to have groundwater monitoring programs. So these two funding priority areas are in direct alignment with the recent governor's office actions and directives associated with environmental justice issues and climate change, in particular the Human Right to Water Law. which is codified in California Water Code Section 106.3, and our and the State Water Board's associated Human Right to Water resolutions. So we've talked about that earlier today. Our State Water Board Regional Liaison, Dee Diano, also emphasized this yesterday as part of a new focus on the Water Board's mission. These priorities are also in alignment with Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, California Water Action Plan, Water Board's mission and strategic plan, and more importantly, they're in alignment with the set criteria within the State Water Board's revised supplemental environmental project policy. So what we're proposing to do is in alignment with the process and the effort that we're going to engage with the State Water Board here to formalize GAP as our third-party pre-approved set. So we have an existing and proven management structure with a third-party nonprofit, which is the Bay Foundation of Morro Bay. We've had a relationship with them going on 20 years now. Because of their affiliation with the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, they meet state and federal auditing requirements, which is going to be a necessary component of having our third-party administrator, being approved by the State Water Board. One of the unique things about our existing management structure is through the direction and support of this board over the years, we've been able to establish endowments using historical settlement funds. These endowments provide us with ongoing funding support to administer the types of projects, high priority projects that we've been implementing in our region. And also is a really good example, our Central Coast Ambient Modeling Program on almost an annual basis has been able to maintain their surface water monitoring programs associated with the state's Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Protection Program, SWAMP program, when the state's lab contracts are delayed, around this time of the year, the fiscal year. So we've never had a lapse in surface water quality monitoring associated with that program in our region since CCAMP became effective. And it's also worth noting that CCAMP was the model that eventually became SWAMP statewide. So since 2015, when we agreed to have GAP as our third-party pre-approved SEP, dischargers have directed almost $1.4 million to that program. And so the other thing worth noting is that through investment income for the GAP program endowment, we're now about halfway to our initial $5 million goal for the endowment. So with the funds that we've received, we've currently allocated almost $1 million of those $1.4 million funds. So the focus on disadvantaged community projects, we've got two projects that we've implemented. One was in the northern part of our region. It was Environmental Justice Coalition for Water. It's focused on outreach and education and helping communities get water quality sampling, replacement water. This grant was leveraged with additional work that the Environmental Justice Coalition was doing as a member of the Regional Water Management Group for the Greater Monterey County Irwin. They were working on projects that were state grant funded, with focuses on bringing disadvantaged communities to the table as part of the Irwin process and addressing their drinking water and wastewater needs and helping them identify solutions. So we were able to leverage the $25,000 for that project to a higher level through the coordination with those projects. Knowing less about disadvantaged communities in the southern part of our region, the second DAC project was focused on doing a a DAC and tribal needs assessment in this other part of our region. That was the Kennedy Communications project that came up briefly before. Of the remaining funds that have not been allocated, that one pending project, item 17, that's where we're going to apply the remaining portion of the GAPSEP funds that we currently have that are being managed by the main foundation of Morro Bay. So I won't talk about that. As far as regional monitoring, we have two domestic well sampling projects. One of them is nearly complete. It's a San Luis Obispo County focused project in coordination with the San Luis Obispo County Environmental Health Department. Been an extremely effective project. We ended up getting much higher rates of response to participate in the project than we had initially anticipated. As of earlier this week, staff have sampled almost 200 wells within San Luis Obispo County. Part of that effort was focused on engaging the county in utilizing the state's GeoTracker system as a data management system for drinking water quality data. The second domestic well project is hopefully going to be launched here in the next several weeks. We're in the final phases of finalizing our DAC-focused outreach plan with our State Water Board Office of Public Participation counterparts. And this is a region-wide project. We've had funding to sample approximately 1,000 wells region-wide. We're coordinating this project with the Department of Pesticide Regulation for them to conduct additional pesticide sampling for selected wells that they're interested in within areas of concern that they have. We're also looking at coordinating. We've had some initial discussions with the Central Coast Urban Funding Area as part of their DAC implementation grant that board member Jane Gray had mentioned earlier. We also have one basin assessment project with Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. They're going to be looking at, I think, about 8 or 9 basins in our region, looking at groundwater age dating and source identification for nitrate. And then we have a hybrid project, which consisted of stipends for two Civic Spark fellows that provided increased community capacity for San Luis Obispo County. One was focused on implementing the outreach and the sampling for the San Luis Obispo domestic well sampling project. So there was some alignment between both of these priorities for this project. The other fellow was focused on assisting San Luis Obispo County in its SGMA related implementation efforts. Helped with outreach, GIS mapping, and one of the things that we were also able to get out of that regionally was a fairly detailed assessment of SGMA-related efforts within our region. So the sustainability agencies, GSA areas. So it was a really quite the bang for the buck that we got for the stipends that we paid for those two fellows. And then we also have one pending SGMA-focused project, and it is going to be assisting the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency and helping them develop a regional monitoring program. And also just to point out, John mentioned that Table 3 in the staff report provides more detail with respect to those projects. So there's two primary benefits associated with having a pre-approved third-party administered SEP. One is that they provide regional benefit that's focused on, you know, prescribed regional priorities. And the second has to do with decreasing the amount of administrative burden on staff to implement, this program and oversee these projects. Having to manage a large number of one-off individual SEPs requires a significant amount of oversight on staff. First of all, we have to review those projects before we approve them to make sure they're consistent with the SET policy. You know, the scopes of work make sense. And then once they go into implementation mode, we have to follow and make sure that the deliverables are consistent with the work plan, tracking of invoices, and then ultimately concurring that the project was completed consistent with the work plan and was effective. We've run into this problem a number of times over the last 20 or years or so, and just having an unmanageable number of projects that we had to oversee, because there's no programmatic funding for this, for us to do this kind of work. And so we've had to absorb it through our existing enforcement program staff, grants program staff, and sometimes even you know, the permitting staff. And in some cases, we've had so many projects that we just could not effectively manage them. And so we're trying to focus our efforts on priority projects, and that's, you know, the pre-approved administered, third-party administered steps will help us do that. Another incentive is also something that's more beneficial to the discharger, is like submittal of payment to the cleanup and abatement account, having a pre-approved SEP once the discharger pays the liability towards that project and that third party receives those funds, their liability associated with that enforcement action are satisfied. Whereas with the first party or standard third party SEPs, they don't know until the project has been completed whether or not their liability has been satisfied. So there's a risk to them that for whatever reason that project is not completed to the satisfaction of Water Board staff, that they're still liable to pay the full amount of that penalty to the cleanup and abatement account. So it eliminates that potential liability and risk to them moving forward. So the State Water Board SEP policy was revised towards the end of last year, and it became final in May of 2018. It has a very specific and new focus on human right to water, environmental justice, and climate change as part of the mission statement portion of that policy. Yeah. So again, what we're proposing here is very consistent with those portions of the revised mission statement, the policy. In particular, with respect to moving forward, the revised SEP policy requires state board approval of regional monitoring programs, as SEPs, as well as approval of third-party administrators. So some of the primary components of the resolution that we'll be crafting in coordination with our office and enforcement counterparts is to get those two things approved by the State Water Board. There's also additional language and requirements associated with added transparency and accountability. So what we're talking about here is going to be a little bit more in the way of process that we're going to have to implement moving forward. Posting of available projects, which would include, in some cases, you know, first and third party SEPs, as well as our third party approved SEP. It also requires annual reporting to the Office of Enforcement to show that, you know, the SEP program has been effectively implemented. And we're looking at using that process on an annual basis to inform this board as well as we move forward. So our next steps will be formalizing our pre-approved third-party administered gap SEP with the State Water Board via resolution. Again, it's to establish our third-party administrator and define the project types and associated criteria that these SEP funds will be put towards. We'll be posting available SEPs on the website, and we'll be providing annual performance updates to show the effectiveness of implementation, and also with respect to this board, to affirm and adjust our priorities as may be necessary as we move forward. So in summary, our current funding priorities are focused on providing assistance to disadvantaged communities and conducting regional monitoring in the areas that I talked about, And we are going to formalize these priorities in coordination with our state water board counterparts as our pre-approved third-party administrator step. And we will be providing you with annual updates, as well as the Office of Enforcement. So with that, do we have any questions?
And I believe you have Office of Enforcement is going to give a presentation.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, I'm not giving you a presentation. I just wanted to make a few comments real quick. I want to introduce myself, Marley, Director of the Office of Enforcement. And we'll be working closely with Matt on this process. And I just wanted to kind of alert you to the fact that there is a number of issues in the new set policy that the State Board expressed concern about for accountability and transparency. And so those are the kind of things we'll be working with as we bring the resolution forward to the State Board, and that it will be an iterative process, and there may be some changes to the status quo of how these SEPs, third-party SEPs, have operated in the past. But we're going to work closely with Matt to maintain the functionality of this relationship with your third-party administrator.
Yeah, I think one thing that, you know, the slides do not show is what I refer to is the money multiplier is over the years, the significant amount of funding through matching funds that this program has generated. And, you know, I don't have the exact numbers to quantify, but I think when it's all said and done, it's a pretty impressive number. And I can think of several projects where the party was able to basically double the funding, you know, what they received from us and what they were able then to match with other entities.
I was just going to point out to your exact point, Chair Wolf, on page 6 of the staff report, we use the example of the Elkhorn Slough where through a settlement, we moved $7 million to them that they leveraged into $35 million in terms of Elkhorn Slough preservation and land acquisitions. So that's pretty extraordinary money multiplier, to your point.
Yeah, and I can think of an example where there had been a water treatment plant spill in the Central Coast. SEP funds were provided. They were able to get matching from Fish and Wildlife. And then after that, we're able to get some funding through NOAA. And so it basically translated into a $1.5 million opportunity. So just want to put a little plug there that, you know, good work has been done. And I would suggest also that the Bay Foundation, if you look at how effective they have been in their investments and very careful in making sure that these funds were yielding good results. I wish in some case my 401k would have done as well. I'll leave it as that.
Couple of questions, Chair. Can I ask a couple of questions?
Yeah, sure.
Regarding the third-party administrators, is it that each SEP project would be administered through its own administrator? You're not talking about doing an RFP for an administrator to handle various SEPs as they come up, are you?
No. So the Bay Foundation is our third-party administrator. They're the trustee for the SEP funds. They enter into the agreements with the third parties in response to the RFPs for the projects.
Okay, so regardless of what county, what project, you would have one third-party administrator?
That's correct.
Okay. My next question is, if you look on page 8 of this staff report, it gives a simplified structure of that Bay Foundation and Morrow Bay inclusion, and at the bottom it shows you that they implement contracts with whatever number of contractors we have needed to implement our SEP projects. So my question is, with the money that the third party spends to manage the accounts, implement contracts, why couldn't our board staff, using the same amount of money, do the same amount of work?
Because we don't have the staff to manage that
the number of projects.
I understand that, but when you give the money to a third party, they didn't have the staff either to do those tasks until you gave them the money to do those tasks. If you give them 10 work months of work each year and you fund that, they may not have had that money for those 10 work months until you gave them 10 work months worth of money. So why couldn't we keep the money and do the same 10 work months of tasks within house?
So we don't in your mouth. So we don't have position authority granted from it's probably Department of Finance at state work, or at the state government. So as we accumulate SEPs, we can't then boost a portion, a fraction of that SEP into a position at the water board to administer the project, as you're suggesting. The only way we can provide oversight for that is to push off priority work that staff is currently working on and create capacity that way, or allow a portion of the SEP to be used as administering capacity at the third-party entity, in this case, the Bay Foundation. Those are our two solutions.
If you were to look back over the last 15 years, is there a ballpark that's consistent of SEP funding that is spent? Is it between $100,000 and $300,000 every year? Or is it just radically different? It's $2 million 1 year and zero the next.
It's more. Well, I wouldn't say it's zero the next, but it is. It fluctuates significantly. You've been around and remember the South Slough County, for example. Took several years to get, but ultimately that was a million-dollar settlement. So it's kind of feast and famine more than it is a steady production of money.
And I'm sorry, I just want to make a few points about the character of what SEPs really are, just to kind of frame this question. SEPs ultimately are money that dischargers, they can choose to divert towards projects as opposed to into the cleanup and abatement account. And the cleanup and abatement account is our statutory authority for receiving these funds and then the grant program to administering them. And so when they are used for the more local identified SEPs that are identified during a settlement process, that money and those oversight costs should be under the policy paid by the party, the discharger, who is paying the penalty, and that is over and above what we should be forgiving them as far as liability. So it's not a one-for-one. There is this acknowledgement in the policy that these projects are beneficial when there's a nexus to the community that is suffered the violations. And that there's a benefit to some dischargers choose to go this route because there's a clear benefit to the community that they've impacted. But those implementation costs, be they 10% of the project or whatever, are over and above what they're getting loan forgiveness for. And these are all, you know, just ultimately state money. The SEP funds are state money that need to be administered, you know, in a transparent manner. And then these oversight costs, these are not projects that the regional board individually dictates. They should be kind of chosen and fully formed and then selected by the dischargers to run to fruition. So just kind of to frame it a little bit.
So given what you just said, it sounds as if it's more appropriate that it's not money kept or received and spent by board on board staff. It's more appropriate in your discussion with us just now that it be from discharger, perhaps through us as a pass-through, to independent third parties?
I think that you really want to be careful that there's not a clear connection. There shouldn't be any incentive for enforcement to be seen as being incentivized for funding these projects. There needs to be some distance in that we cannot use enforcement. SEP is never the reason why we bring enforcement. We do not use enforcement to fund SEPs. It's something that happens in the settlement process on the side that can be very beneficial, but they should be projects that meet all the SEP criteria in the policy
And yes, I think there's a benefit to having a third party administer them and do the legwork, because, again, you can have the agreement between the third party and the discharger on what those costs are going to be and how they're going to pay for it, and the regional boards don't need to be involved in that. One of the things that Matt hit on that is one of the issues that will be open for discussion during this resolution process is when does the liability get absolved? Generally, under the policy, we don't like to let the dischargers absolve themselves of the liability simply by writing a check to the third party, because we like to hold them accountable, because there's a need to make sure that the SEP gets accomplished and gets accomplished to the expectations that were set in the outset. So something with having a third-party administrator like this, where you have this track record of accountability, this transparency of accounting, can be very beneficial, because they will make sure that the project gets done and it'll be tracked well. And then the discharger pays to make sure that that tracking and that accountability is done appropriately outside of what their liability would have otherwise been. So there's definitely some benefits to the relationship. I just wanted to frame it a little bit so that we understand that they're not, strictly speaking, regional board projects that the regional board undertakes.
Would you agree that the harder the state board or the regional board pushes for multi-year liability, the more disincentive there is for a discharger to go that route?
Yeah, it's really a tricky subject, and it's been an issue. That's why the state board and some of these resolutions for Region 2 and the relationship we have in Region 5, there's been a little bit of give on that issue. But ultimately, it's a question of, you know, who assumes the risk of non-performance, and is it fair to put it on the discharger or the violator, or versus the third party administering it? Versus the state, the regional board and the state and the taxpayers. And so we've always pushed for that risk to stay with the violator until the project is completed. But again, when there's a stable relationship with a track record, if the state board has in the past adopted resolutions that allow on a case-specific basis for that liability to shift.
From your perspective at the state, what is the track record throughout our state and in Region 3 for compliance? So is it a high risk that's been demonstrated by past failures, or is it low risk demonstrated by largely past successes?
Well, what we'll be doing is working with your staff in the Office of Enforcement to gather that information and demonstrate why, you know, to advocate for the resolution, to craft a resolution that complies with the bulk of the SEP policy to the extent possible, and when we're asking for exceptions, to highlight that for the state board and to highlight why we're asking for those exceptions and why they're justified. Right. So that's the process we'll be undergoing. I haven't had an opportunity to do a review of your history in the SEPs. I've only seen these staff reports and the same information that you've seen about the track record that was it the Bay Foundation? The Monterey Bay Foundation has with the SEPs in your region. And maybe it sounds good so far. I mean, it sounds like you have a good track record and a lot of successes.
And statewide, what is the reputation of SEP in this sort of process? Is it a good one, or is it
There was definitely a period before the SEP policy where there was some audits and a lot of pressure on accountability that SEP projects weren't always being completed as envisioned. And that the results weren't being obtained. And so that was the genesis of the SEP policy originally. And then this recent amendment was to address the right to safe drinking water concerns that the legislature recently passed, and to make sure that it did address disadvantaged communities and put an emphasis on those areas. And that's what the recent amendments concern. But yes, there was some history in the past with accountability issues, and that's why the SEP policy clearly defines what is an acceptable, not acceptable SEP, what kind of transparency needs to happen in the SEP identification process and in the funding of these projects.
Right. Thank you for being here today.
Sure, thank you.
All right, so I'll continue on my left.
Yeah, I don't have any questions. I just think this is an extremely valuable program, and I'm very happy to see it continue. I would, as it relates to the priorities, I would like to maybe add a little bit to the environmental justice aspect of it, as we can, pursuant to some of the conversations we had about the unsheltered communities and the water quality nexus, and if there's any way to thread sort of climate resilience through some of the work that we are doing, I think that would be extremely helpful.
So going back many years, I think maybe over 10 years ago, I think we had discussions about the use of regional SEP projects, and I think the tension then was that dischargers and communities really wanted to see the funds kept locally. And so I think what this state water policy does is to officially kind of clear that up and say that regional projects are totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of what they were trying to do with this?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. I mean, it defines what expectations those regional projects should meet, but that they are acceptable means of funneling this, you know, using liability money, liabilities that are imposed when there's a voluntary agreement from the violator.
Right.
I have a great little chart, I didn't bring it, I'm sorry, with a pie chart showing how much money comes out of the cleanup and abatement account to all the various regions as well. So even when there isn't a SEP, these liability funds do come back to the region. It's not as satisfying, I don't think, for the regional boards because it's not this direct involvement where you're identifying and hearing about the projects, but the cleanup and abatement fund grants, of course, do go back to the regional boards as well. And it's pretty proportional. You know, so the regions with the larger liability collection amounts tend to take a pretty proportional chunk of the cleanup and abatement account. But that's something I can provide you later, too.
So could you explain again a little bit about how this works? A civil liability is assessed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a settlement. It's agreed to. There's a dollar amount. The discharger can opt to have some of that sent into a SEP, but not more than 50%?
That's correct.
And so the other part goes into the cleanup and abatement account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then of that 50% that goes into the SEP, are there pre-approved local projects
mm-hmm.
that already are in the menu that we have?
Matt can speak to your region specifically, but generally speaking, the policy asks that the regions develop a list of pre-approved SEPs and have them available for dischargers to select from. And here it sounds like it'll be a similar situation, but with a third-party administrator. But yes, and then our state board SEP, the state board has a SEP, approved SEPs on their website as well. But we ask, the policy looks to establish a nexus between the violation and the project, so there needs to be some connection between the type of violation for the penalty was collected and maybe the watershed that was impacted, geographic connect, or the program area that was impacted is another way to demonstrate that nexus.
Okay, so local projects, Matt, are there going to be pre-approved local SEPs in lieu of regional SEPs?
Well, it depends on how we compose our resolution with the state water board. Right now, the way we're looking at it is that we are concerned about opening the door to receiving a potentially large number of proposals for regional projects and having to review and vet them.
You mean local projects?
Local projects. We're not going to prevent dischargers from identifying and proposing or selecting a third-party project. But again, we've run into capacity issues with respect to trying to vet a large number of projects. What we're likely going to do is utilize the State Water Board's existing kind of statewide project list and allow third parties to propose SEPs into that system, and then we'll make that list available to dischargers in our region as part of that ACL process.
So it sounds like if a discharger wants a local SEP, they're probably going to have to come up with something on their own.
If they want to do a first party, yes, or they can go to a statewide list and they can select a project off of that list that has a local project.
Okay.
Yeah, so the statewide list can contain local projects as well.
Okay. Yeah. All right, great. Thank you.
So as I understand it, we've been operating for the last several years, 3 years, I think, with pre-approved SEPs, which were GAP and CCAMP, correct?
Just GAP.
Just GAP. Okay. So we've been operating with GAP as a pre-approved SEP, and it has had local aspects for much of the region.
Yes. Since 2015.
Okay. And so are we gonna? Do we anticipate the resolution continuing to do that as well?
That is our hope, yes.
Okay, to have GAP as a pre-approved regional, and we sort of have used GAP to fund a variety of different things, really.
That's correct.
Okay.
Within the confines of our discussions with you regarding our funding priorities.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right, so heard from my colleagues, and, you know, I'll just kind of frame this big picture too, that on a local level, you know, I think it is very important to recognize that local communities do appreciate when they see the money staying locally. You know, it makes a big headline in the paper when you get a spill, you know, gee, you know, 1.2 million gallon, and, you know, folks having to deal with raw sewage in the street, and then they see their community district being fined, and it's like, oh my goodness, this comes actually also from our sewer fees. So I think it is important for the local community when they recognize, okay, some of it is coming back to the community. In some cases, you know, enhancement, as you point out, enhancement of a water treatment facility beyond what is legally required, because certainly what we don't want to do, the unintended consequence, is to have folks upgrade their system on things that they should do. So it has to be above and beyond, and I think that's one area where staff does a good job, you know, where we make sure that, you know, we don't end up paying for deferred maintenance, for example. So that local community input is very important, and, you know, we've had hearings here where we hear that from the people saying, gee, you know, you're gonna fine them $1 million, but, you know, we're the one indirectly paying for this. So that's the other, I think, very important aspect of keeping things local. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I'm not sure, but I'm not sure I agree with that completely. I think that there is a real staff cost to doing lots of small projects, number one, because not only do we have to vet them, you know, and all that, but then we really have to make sure that they're completed. And I think that there is a regional benefit to what we've been able to do. I mean, when you look at what we're proposing doing, for example, with the RFP that we discussed earlier, of putting a very large chunk of change towards what we see as kind of kickstarting something that will substantially benefit the region overall in a whole lot of different ways down the road. We can't, you know, the only reason we're able to do that is that we've basically, in lieu of a whole bunch of little dinky projects, have accumulated a pot of money that we can have impact with. So, I understand that it makes people feel good if their sewage treatment plant spilled 5 years ago, and 3 years ago there was a hearing and they read in the newspaper, you know, and now they see some funding going to something. But in terms of water quality in the region and, you know, meeting our basic mission in the region, I'm not sure that really that outweighs the benefits of being able to put together a big pots of money and spend them strategically. I don't think it does.
Well, I clear as this, but I disagree, because to me it's analogous to sometime cleanup and abatement fund, which I'd like to see that pie chart and see what's the Central Coast regional piece of the pie looks like. There, it's not all or nothing in my view, you know, meaning there's a certain amount of funds that, yes, go into regional projects, but I think there is absolute justification to have some funding to stay local, too. And when we say, you know, little piddly or rinky-dinky projects, we take the, you know, the South County spill, there was some big ticket items that were used as part of SEP. I think it was in the tune of over $250,000, if my memory serves me right. So I think, you know, I look at it as not all or nothing, you know, a little bit of both. You know, certainly to me seems to be a balanced approach.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, actually, on both views, in the sense that GAP is a big program and pot of money, when you look at the projects that we've got right now, current, they're small, but they're strategic. So I don't think there's a single formula, where we're just simply going to follow a predetermined long-range plan that doesn't allow us to accommodate unique needs that can be strategically accomplished. So when we see 25,000 going for DAC outreach and assistance with the Monterey County well testing, that was something timely that I thought, boy, that's not a lot of money, and yet that's one of our hardest areas is outreach. Look at the DAC and tribal needs assessment that Kennedy did for us. Again, it wasn't a lot of money, but Elena Kennedy brought a lot of capacity with her experience and covered a lot of ground. I mean, we were very selective in how we identified the assistance that we needed, and we brought in somebody who was very capable, and building on her work in the region with the UCLA project. So, I mean, I think because we had that local insight and we had the ability to kind of see these strategic leverage opportunities, a little bit of money can go a long way. And it's coming out of GAP funding, so we have this big pool, but it, you know, there's a scale there that's often very small amounts of money can really move, advance us, because we know where those gap, pardon the pun, we know where the difference, you know, we know what the difference will be if we just put a little bit of money in a direction with a very targeted outcome. And I think staff has done a really good job of that. And I'm hoping that the new SEP policy will allow us to continue to have that discretion and looking at our record and our history of how our money's. And I think our monies have shifted over time. Our priorities have shifted over time. If you look back, the early SEPs, you know, we pulled old derelict boats out of the estuary. Mm-hmm. That was a big priority, and I think it was $2,000 a boat, you know. And those were serious problems for the estuary. I don't know how many we pulled out. But our priorities have changed, so I hope that will be taken into account as well. In looking at our ability to continue to use these SEP funds for very strategic and high-priority needs. And just a small thing, it's not the Monterey Bay Foundation, it's the Bay Foundation.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
because
I realize
they are based in Morro Bay.
Right, the Morro Bay Foundation.
Right.
All right, so this wraps up, you know, inputs from the board. Mr. Robertson, do you have any closing remark on that item before we move to item 19?
I would like to acknowledge that the executive director, Eileen Sobeck, is also here, and I wasn't sure if
Ms. Sobeck wanted to add any comment to this item.
Thank you. Just one short comment. I really commend the board and all the work and all the thought you put into this and all of the success stories. I do think that, and I think the good news about SEPs is, you know, if there isn't a good place to put the money, it goes into the Cleanup and Abatement Act. It's not, the money is, that comes in from violators or dischargers, you know, does come to the state and is, through some mechanism or another, going to a good cause. I do think that it's important to remember that SEPs are not providing money that goes to us, the boards, to decide where it gets spent. We can set priorities, but it's not money that comes into our budgets. And I think that we do use some shorthand, and I know that we don't mean that we're doing the projects, but I think we do have to be careful, and this is the case as well for EPA and the federal level. It can't be seen as we have our pet charities or our pet projects, and we're directing state money to go to those. So that's why there's a little bit of distance. Either it's administered by the the violator themselves, the first party SEP. It's a voluntary. They don't have to do it if they don't want to. It's a proposal that they come forward with. Ours and your priorities are part of the criteria that we judge the appropriateness, but if they came in with something that met a priority, even if it was a third or fourth or fifth tier priority, we really wouldn't be in a position to say we'd rather have you do our first level priority that meets the criteria. And I just think and that's why we have third-party administrators, because it's not our money to spend, it's somebody else's money that they made a proposal in lieu of an actual penalty amount that would go to the cleanup and abatement fund. And so we're trying to reach that appropriate balance between setting the criteria and having an objective list that we judge proposals by, and in some cases where a violator can't come up with their own proposal, we judge a third party's set of proposals by, and versus it's money that we direct how it's spent or put out our own kind of, direct RFPs on. So I don't think that there anything that you said or any of the priorities that you've discussed or any of the past projects fall on the wrong side of that line, but I think that that's kind of the framing that I look at this through, having seen both how SEPs are handled at both the federal and the state level. So thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thanks for providing this input as well, and also reiterating, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate that, and having the opportunity to meet our board. Thank you so much.
So I too want to thank both Eileen and Yvonne. In closing, staff's now going to work with Office of Enforcement staff to align our SEP program or efforts with the new modified SEP policy going forward. And we will update you on that too.
All right. Very good. So thank you. So this concludes item 18.